And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and this is another episode of the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable featuring the writers of Cottagers Confidential. Tonight joining me is Max Cohen and editor Andrew Beck. We have much to get through, but before we get going, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. Mr. Max Cohen, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Russ. Always a pleasure to be on the show.
It's great to have you back, Max. It was a great first show that we did, and I look forward to going through this with you. Okay, very good. And also on the line with us is editor of Cottagers Confidential, Andrew Beck. Andrew, how are you doing?
Really good. It's 70 degrees, sunny, and I'm not at work, so.
Well, that's great. That's good. Well, listen, I'm looking forward to doing this show with you guys again, and we're gonna make this a regular occurrence. We're gonna try to do this twice a month because the response from the first Cottagers Confidential Roundtable was excellent. So I thought, why not do this again? Like I said, this is a different style of show. You know, we have many topics that we're gonna get through, and I look forward to doing the show with both of you. So without further ado, let's get going. We actually have some departures to talk about. In the last episode of Cottage Talk, we actually talked about this, but we're going to talk about it again here. And Andrew, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts on Andy Lonergan leaving for Wolves? On top of that, we have some speculation with Fulham being linked to a 21-year-old goalkeeper from Hellas Verona in Italy, Pierluigi Gullini. What are your thoughts about Lonergan leaving and also the speculation?
Well, in my opinion, Lonergan at this point in his career, he's kind of proven he's at best a number two keeper in the championship. I don't think he's a starter in the championship, so I don't think it hurts that much to let him go. And he thinks that he's got a chance to win a starting job at Wolves, and he probably didn't have that opportunity at Fulham. So if they got any sort of fee for him at all, I don't see that as a problem. I'm a little bit confused about the link to the Italian keeper because he seemed to have won the job at his club about halfway through the year, and he started, I think, 26 games
Correct.
In Serie A. So if you're bringing him in, you're bringing him in to be the starting keeper at 21. And when you already have your two keepers are, like, I think 23 and 24 already on the books, that's a lot of young keepers. And I don't know how you're going to keep all of those guys happy. Especially when, like, someone like Bettinelli was just being linked to big clubs just you know, 12 months ago. So people think highly of him, so I don't know what that does to him if you bring in a 21-year-old to take his job.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to discuss this, because I find it fascinating. Again, this is speculation. Let's call it what it is. But it's coming from Italy that Fulham are linked to this young goalkeeper. And at first blush, it does not look like a similar situation to Andy Lonergan, where you felt Andy Lonergan was coming in as a backup goalkeeper. His age makes me feel, Andrew, that he's going to be, if he comes to Fulham, let's just say this is speculation, if he comes to Fulham, I think he's going to be fighting for a starting position.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And then that's one of the things is I don't think he would move to Fulham unless he's pretty sure that he's going to get the starting job.
That's a great point.
He's already got the starting job at his club in Italy, and I don't think playing in Serie B is that much different than playing in the championship. I mean, he'll make more money, obviously, in the championship, but the quality isn't going to be that much different.
No, that's a good point, Andrew. Max, what are your thoughts about all this? Again, we're talking about this, and part of this is Andy Lonergan leaving, but I just find it curious that Fulham are now linked to this young goalkeeper. They were actually linked to a goalkeeper in the January transfer window. Does this make you feel that, again, speculation, but does this make you feel that possibly Savic is looking for a number one goalkeeper?
Yeah, it is interesting, and I agree with you. It is a little bit odd that they're going for a keeper who is younger, around the same age as Bettinelli, rather than a more experienced championship goalkeeper. Because during the January transfer window, we are linked to Alex McCarthy, the backup of Palace, who is more of a traditional English goalkeeper who you might expect to do well in the championship. Whereas Gullini, he's relatively unproven, and he's never played in England before, especially. So it is odd, but I do think this is really tells you more about Solis's plan for the whole defense. And he considers there needs to be a complete just turnaround in defense. I think everyone recognizes that. And he's starting with the keeper, which is an interesting approach. I think probably the center back was the first point of concern rather than the keeper. Most of the goals we conceded might have been the fault of Bettinelli, but the blame for me has to fall on the center back. So I'd be more interested if you're targeting more proven English center halves rather than under-21 Italian keeper.
Very interesting because, you know, I've said that I would not be against them looking for a number one goalkeeper, but I agree with you. I think that they should be looking at the overall defense, and for me, the center back position is something that they need to be looking at first. You know, again, I've said this on several shows. I would like them to target that first, and maybe they are, but I just find it interesting that potentially, according to speculation, they could be targeting a keeper. Andrew, what are your thoughts about this?
I would not have been shocked for them to bring in a keeper, and I think part of it might be that, from what I understand about Slavisa, he's a much more kind of play it out of the back, keep the ball on the ground kind of, that's the style of football he wants to play, and English keepers, a lot like a lot of American keepers traditionally, that's not what they were brought up doing. They're much more, let's stop shots and kick the ball a long way. And I wonder if that's why he's thinking younger and going to a different league, if that gives us some clue to the style of defense he's going to want to play, with a lot of passes back to the keeper and the ball at the keeper's feet a lot.
Oh, very interesting. Max, what are your thoughts about what Andrew just shared?
Yeah, I think it's a very good point that Slavisa is definitely a more continental approach that favors possession. I do think that's a big part of keeping these days. In the past, and maybe more in England, it's a bit behind the rest of the world, and whereas the keeper is almost serves as your last defender rather than somebody who saves shots. I mean, I think an example is, of course, Neuer. He's an outlier, obviously. But more keepers are becoming more adept at their feet and really are as technically good, might be as technically good as center backs in some ways. So I think that's a good point. I was also looking on more speculation on the internet and saw that reading articles that's linking Everton, Napoli, and Fiorentina to this keeper, Gallini, in the past. So I was wondering, you know, if I'm Gallini and being courted by Napoli, Everton, Fiorentina, do I choose both? I don't know. Might be a long
shot. Great point. It's a great point, but it might go back to something that Andrew said as well, Max. You know, if he's coming to Fulham, he's probably expecting to be the number one goalkeeper.
That's true, yeah. So if he wants to play, I definitely say come to Fulham.
Okay, my friend. Very good, very good. All right, let's move on from that. This is something that we're going to have to follow. Again, it's speculation season, so we have to follow it. Very interesting opening discussion on departures, but we have another departure, and Max, you wrote about this on the Boot Room, so let's now talk about this. What are your thoughts on Emerson Hyman leaving Fulham for Bournemouth?
Yes. My first reaction as an American and as a real supporter of Fulham America as well, I was disappointed to hear Hyman leaving, because this is a young midfielder, came to Fulham when he was 15, and was part of that talented 2014 FA Youth Cup Finals team with Moussa Dembélé and Patrick Roberts. And they were really the hope for Fulham. The season they got relegated, the one kind of shining, the bright moment was, at least our youth team was good and there's a bright future. And now it appears all three of those seminal players will be leaving SW6 in the summer. And I thought Hyman really was not ready to leave for Bournemouth. Because, to be honest with you, I really want to succeed. I think a lot of people in the club want to succeed. But he's never had a good season at Fulham. At most, he's strung together three games. He's never been first choice. And that's why it struck me as ever the more odd why he chose to make a move to Bournemouth, where I think first-team football is going to be harder to come by playing in the Premier League. And the main concern with Hyman was that he wasn't physically ready enough. And that if you're a player at that age, the most important thing is getting games. And I'll be honest, moving to Bournemouth, I'd say it's probably one of the better clubs to go to the Premier League, probably the most like Fulham, in my opinion, with a family culture. But nevertheless, it was an odd move, and I think he would have definitely would have been better served to staying for at least a couple of more years.
Okay, very interesting there. Andrew, over to you. What are your thoughts about Emerson Hyman leaving for Bournemouth? Very interesting take by Max on the situation.
Yeah, I was going to say that if he was going to go to the Premier League, Bournemouth might be one of the better teams to go to because I don't see anyone in their midfield that is so good that he's just not going to be able to win a job. When he was being linked to teams like United or Spurs or even going to some bigger clubs in Germany, I just didn't see how he was going to get any playing time unless he just made a giant leap forward. And Bournemouth, he has a chance at least to start there. I mean, he could end up in a situation like Fulham where they get dragged back down into a relegation battle and the manager goes with a lot of, you know, proven older guys. But at least at the beginning of the season, I think he probably has a better chance to break in and be a first-team player there than most of the other clubs in the Premier League. So at least that kind of when I saw it was Bournemouth, at least I understood his decision a little bit better. He's going to a better league, and he's going to a club where he can probably get some playing time if he's good enough. It's not going to be where, even if he's good enough, he might not get playing time because these other guys are so expensive and ahead of him.
Okay, very interesting. And Andrew, my thoughts on this, again, I've been high on Emerson Hyman for a long time. I've obviously have seen him play for some of the youth teams for the U.S. men's national team. And the best word I can use to describe him is potential. He has huge potential. And I did not want to see him go. I wanted him to stay with Fulham. If he's going to go somewhere, if I'm thinking of him as a player, I think Bournemouth is a good place. But let me ask you, do you think, because this is something I've been thinking about, do you think that he left because of the lack of game time? You know, this goes back to the transition from the gap where he was starting to play a good amount of matches. Then under Kit, his game time really, match time really dried up. What are your thoughts? Do you think that was a huge factor here, or do you think he just wanted to move on, that no matter what, he was going to move on? What do you think were his motivation for leaving?
I think the playing time is a big part of it, and I honestly, since I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, I was a little bit surprised that he started to break through, and he seemed to be playing well. The team was playing awful, but he was having some pretty good performances under McGath early, and then Kit Simmons came in, and he basically didn't see any more time after that. Then he picked up an injury with the national team, and then when the last season started up again, Kit wasn't playing him. And then there was the whole I'm not signing a new contract thing, so the team wasn't really interested in playing him. And then finally he got some time at the end, and Slavisa was like, oh, wait, this guy's pretty good. I think being yanked around like that probably had some impact on him, because Slavisa and the club can say, oh, yeah, you're a part of our future. We really want you here. You're going to play. He's like, you've told me this before. So I can understand in that situation, you're 20 years old, you want to play, and you want to go somewhere where you know you think you have a really good shot to win a job, and you're the place you're at, they've told you that, and you still haven't really been given an opportunity in your own mind.
I think that's a good
point
as well, Andrew. And I also just want to bring up something Alexander Kakanich had said when he was leaving the club. That might be a sign of things players are considering. In his note on Twitter, he said, there's still some good people at the club. And that's almost kind of a back-end compliment, saying that overall, the club is kind of a shambles behind the scenes, and that they've had three managers over the past couple of years. They're really in a nosedive in terms of league position. And I think players, if you're a young player, you know, I don't really agree with this, but you might say, Fulham's a club in decline, being poorly managed. And however, I mean, it's painful for me to say this, but, you know, I think maybe that's part of his reason.
Interesting. Listen, you could be on to something. Maybe he doesn't have faith in the direction that they're going, and I hope he's wrong if that's where he's going. Again, we're not in the mind of Emerson Hyman, but you could be on to something, and I hope that's not the factor, but it could be. That's a very interesting take there, Max. Anything else you want to share about Hyman before we move on?
Well, I just wish him the best at Bournemouth, and hopefully, I mean, I do agree with you guys that that's probably the best club in the Premier League.
Yeah. It's too bad because I think he has potential. I look at these players. Andrew, before we move on, I want to get your thoughts. Listen, we've lost now Pat Roberts, Emerson Hyman. We could potentially lose Moussa Dembele. I was thinking about this. You know, some of our sports here in America, we are three Americans. We follow baseball, and we're used to the minor league system of prospects. And I look at these three players as, I guess you could say, blue chip prospects. Does this, you know, is this just part of business, losing some of these players? Does this give you reason to be concerned, or do you just think this is part of doing business in the championship?
I think it's really just part of doing business, and I mean, it's, they are losing them, and then at least in the Dembele, if he does go, and the Hyman thing, they're not getting transfer fees, but they are getting compensation because of the rules around that, and that's just part, I think, part of doing business. And in a way, you can look at it, well, it's good. The academy is funding the team. I mean, they're putting money into the academy, and then your academy either needs to spit out first-team players or it needs to spit out money when these players move on to other teams. And at least it's doing one of those two things. I mean, it's a few first-team players, and they're getting some money when these players go elsewhere. So in that sense, it's good. I just wish that more of the better players were staying longer.
I agree, and what's interesting, I look at the model of Southampton and how many players Southampton has lost, and they just keep on churning out all these great players. Some of them stay, and let's just hope that the pattern would be like that for Fulham, that they will sell some. Mike Greg has said, you know, he looks at it this way, you've got to sell one young player a season. And that's the reality of the business world with the championship. But you then hope that other players will stay, that you can build around. I was hoping Hyman was one of them, but he's not. And listen, we move on and we wish him the best. All right, guys, let's move on. Let's now go to a section I call Cottage's Confidential Writer Spotlight. And we're going to talk about three articles by the same writer, James Eade. He's actually been a little bit prolific lately writing articles, some very interesting stuff. So we're going to talk about it because I think these three articles are very topical and very interesting. So, and we're going to lead with one that actually goes off of us talking about Emerson Hyman. It is entitled, As Hyman Departs, The Club Seeks to Find New Star. And I'm just going to read from the article. And this is from James Eade, Danish midfielder Lasse Vigen Christensen. The young Dane has the characteristics that could see him turn into a complete midfielder within the next few seasons. The midfielder boasts many strengths to his game already. Strength on the ball, provides excellent hold-up play, and ability to supply dynamic runs into advanced positions to create opportunities. The versatility to his game is what makes me believe that he will be crucial in the club's revival, in form, and for many years to follow. LVC possesses an assortment of passing styles, from short passes in the center of the field to deft through balls and clever layoffs for the attackers. At 21 years old, LVC has his whole career ahead of him with the potential to become a legend at the club. Predominantly played in the holding role, Christensen has found himself pushed out to wide midfield roles last season, starting 7 times on the left and 5 on the right. Jokanović should look to move Christensen forward to a central midfield role to utilize the strengths to his game, which would see him ideally suit a box-to-box midfielder role and become the engine of the team. Very interesting article by James Eade. Andrew, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts about what James wrote, and do you agree with him?
I mostly agree with him because, I mean, if you think back, what was that, 2 seasons ago, he was starting to break through with the club, and he was 19, and he looked like everything was going well, and then 2 seasons ago, I remember very specifically writing an article, I think at Cottagers Confidential, where Fulham hadn't won a game unless Brian Ruiz or Lasse Vigen Christensen had started. I mean, it was a long run of games, and it was, if one of those two guys hadn't started, we hadn't won. It was kind of amazing. But it just seems every time he starts to get in the first team, he's playing well, then he gets hurt. And that just always seems to set his development back. And I worry, this has been 2 or 3 years now where he's he's always seemed to be picking up some nagging injury, and I worry if that's just going to be a thing going forward or it's all just bad luck. I just with injuries, you just never know. Sometimes it's just bad luck, and some guys are just prone to injuries. And I really, if he can get over that and play consistently, I think he's got a chance to be really, really good.
Listen, I agree with you, and I'm glad that you brought up the injury concerns, because that's my number one concern when it comes to LVC. And Andrew, one of the things that I really thought about this, because I've always thought of him as the potential to be this center midfield, really leader in central midfield, but he's been out wide, you know, trying to, you know, I almost feel like it is putting a square peg in a round hole. Do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, he's not a winger, but a lot of the times when he's lined up out wide, we've been playing kind of odd formations, and I know we're going to get to that in a minute, but some of the times he's been playing as nominally the right midfielder, but we're playing sort of a 3-5-2 or a, you know, 5-3-2, depending on how you look at it, where the fullbacks or the wingbacks are actually more the wide players, and he's being more of a box-to-box shuttler. And I think a box-to-box shuttler is kind of a role, like if you're going to play like the diamond midfield, the right and left midfielders are really just central midfielders in that formation.
Right.
And I think that's okay, and I think he's been used that way a lot. He's definitely not a winger. I think he could play an attacking midfielder role in the center. I think a shuttler, a box-to-box guy, is his best position. But I think even as a holding midfielder, a deep-line playmaker, he would be more than capable of doing that. I mean, he actually, the player that on Fulham he reminded me the most of, he's kind of like Emerson Hyndman. He's a little bit bigger, but they're kind of the same player. They're the central midfielders who don't really have the one central midfield position that they have, but they can basically plug all of the roles.
See, I think that's where James was going, because that's a very good comparison. And but I think what has happened is the injuries have overshadowed all this great potential that we've seen, because we forget some of the moments that he had, say, 2 years ago. I mean, he had some very good moments. He looked very promising, and he was very well thought of with this other group of young players. So I think it's very interesting that James brings this up. But Max, I'm going to go to you. I agree with James that LVC could fit the role. I am concerned about injuries, but here's my thing. He can fit the role, and I've seen other people say this on social media. They still need to find a real proven central midfielder regardless. Would you agree with that?
I completely agree. I think LVC is a great prospect, and we saw in the 2014-15 season where he won goal of the season with his first thing box-to-box run and a cheeky finish. Now he's becoming a mainstay of his game. Obviously he got hurt, but I do think he's going to be an important player next year. But regardless, I agree, Russ. They do need that, like a Scotty Parker, but I wish 10 years younger. They need a player exactly like Scott Parker, but who actually has some legs left in him, because they need that English someone who's used to the championship, who's aggressive, who's passionate, who can really be a captain, but the leader. And I mean, I wish we could turn back time and get Scott Parker in his prime, because that is the exact player Fulham needs, and that's what they're missing. Because simply, after we lost Danny Murphy, we have never replaced that central midfielder position. That's so necessary for a team to succeed.
Totally right.
We've never truly replaced it. And that's what we need to do.
Listen, and I think that has been one of Fulham's biggest problems, is not having the ability to replace Danny Murphy. I could also have the same argument that I've had for several years, that they never replaced the other Moussa Dembele, the original Moussa Dembele. But Danny Murphy, I think, not being able to replace him was even a bigger loss. Would you agree with that, Max?
I completely agree. And I do agree with you said about Moussa Dembele. He was in that same mold as Danny Murphy, but also he moved on to bigger and better things. And the center midfielder is really the spine of the team. And if you don't have a quality center midfielder, then you're going to struggle in the championship and having a broken team from Fulham. So I think really we have to focus on the spine of our team in the transfer window. Center back, center midfielders, those have to be the top concern. Because without them, we're kind of lost. And we've shown in the last couple of years with the poorest defense, it kind of starts with the center midfielder as well. So it's a crucial position. And I think Loss Vegan Christensen is a good start. We really need to bolster options.
I totally agree. And, Andrew, I'm going to go back to you. I want to get your thoughts about me wanting to bring in an experienced, a proven central midfielder. And your thoughts about that I'm talking about. Two players, you know, again, different roles, but played central. We're strong central. Danny Murphy and Moussa Dembele, and I don't think Fulham replaced either one of them.
Oh, no, they haven't. Moussa Dembele is probably my favorite player that's ever been at Fulham. I just loved watching him on the ball, and he played central midfield different than almost anyone I've ever seen play that position. Just the way he dribbled through traffic instead of passing the ball through traffic, it was kind of amazing. The one thing I'll say is that Fulham do have some options. If they can get one of, like, Ryan Tunnicliffe or Lasse Vigen Christensen to kind of make a step forward, that
right.
solves a lot of problems. They're both young enough where they can. So, I mean, I agree. They definitely need to sign one, because at least one at central midfielder. I prefer a couple. But if you can say, well, we've got Scott Parker and we know what we're going to get from him, and hopefully one of Tunnicliffe or Christensen can step forward, and then we're going to sign these two guys, I think that could be a pretty solid central midfield core, especially when you've got someone like Tom Kearney, who, even though he's not really a central midfielder, he's going to be kind of sitting in that role in a more advanced position.
Sure, sure. I'm glad that you brought up Kearney as well. But Andrew, one of the things that I'm thinking about while we're talking about this, and James writes about having LVC play a central role. The question is, will Savica play him in that role?
That's what I don't know, because it's kind of similar to when Kit Simmons took over about halfway after McGath got fired, and he just started rolling out the 4-4-2 diamond. And
yep.
The question was that what he wanted to play, or was he playing that because he had been given this mismatch of players and that was the only way he could figure out to put them together? It was at the end of last season when Slavisa started, he switched formations around and switched his methodology around and did a lot of stuff, and it was, I never really knew if that was because he wasn't sure what he wanted to do or he just didn't know what to do with these players that he had.
Very interesting, and that's been an issue here. You know, do you find the formation to fit what you have, or do you play the formation you want to play, and force the players to play within it? Personally, if you're asking me, Andrew, I would rather have a player play his proper position, and find the formation that works around that. That to me, you know, I would rather have a player in his, you know, put him in the best position to succeed than play him out of position. I know that's easier said than done, but that's where I'm going on that.
No, I definitely agree with that. I'm much more of a, you work with the players you have, you try to get the best players you have, and then you kind of figure out how to use them.
Exactly.
Use them in the best way possible. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think too often we've seen players not playing to their strengths. You know, just out there because they're good players, the best players, but they tend to be a waste at a position that really is not their strength. And I would rather see a player play a position where he's strong at. That's where I'm coming from. All right, guys, talking about formations, let's talk about another of James's articles. It is entitled, "Is a Change of Formation a Formula for Fulham's Success?" Very interesting. He talks about the last formation that Fulham were using a decent amount was the 4-4-2. He writes in his article, he talks about Leicester City using it and also Atletico Madrid using it, and it's been used a great deal in England. He talks about also that Fulham used 4 central midfield. So that's the starting point. And then he goes through the strengths. I'm gonna read them to you. This is from James's article. "The main strength of the 4-4-2 formation is to have 2 banks of 4 and 2 front men. The 2 lines of 4 keep the formation disciplined, and the 2 strikers play off of each other. Weaknesses: although the formation may be disciplined, it leaves the team flat and prone to most passing styles of play." Now, later on in his article, he proposes this formation, which is a 4-2-3-1 that Jurgen Klopp has used at Borussia Dortmund and is now using at Liverpool. So I'm now going to read a little bit more from James's article about the 4-2-3-1. The key characteristics to the formation is that of soaking up the pressure in the midfield and quickly dispersing the ball with quick build-up play before releasing the counterattack. A style of play that causes opposing teams to fatigue. The 4-2-3-1 formation has brought success across Europe's top leagues, and which a majority of the Premier League clubs have donned over the last couple of seasons. Strengths? As Afram mentioned, the style of play is ideal for quick build-up play. Triangle passing effectively breaks down the opposition. Having two holding midfielders soaks up any pressure, allowing any one of the more attacking midfielders to drop to supply options, making it increasingly more difficult to defend against. The weaknesses, according to James, after assessment, the 4-2-3-1 is the formation with the least weaknesses. The one weakness that has become evident is only having one striker can then become stranded. The style play can easily be adjusted to support this game plan. Okay, Max, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts of what James wrote about potential change of formation from a 4-4-2, we've also played the 3-5-2 last year under Slavica, to a 4-2-3-1?
I think the discussion really depends on whether Moussa Dembele stays at Fulham. If he stays at Fulham, I think Slavica has no choice but to go with a 4-4-2 or a 3-5-2, as you mentioned, because the combination between Dembele and McCormack is simply the best in the championship, and it's so prolific. Now, if Dembele leaves, that makes it much more interesting, because then the question is asked, who do you put up front with Ross? I think then the 4-2-3-1 might be the option you have to go to, but I really do think the 3-5-2 might be the best formation, because I think, as James has also written, Ryan Fredericks is a very exciting wing-back who can provide that wing-back width and pace very well, and Fulham can go shopping for another fullback who can do that. So I think the 4-2-3-1 is because it hasn't become very popular, but I do think the problem is the striker up front has become isolated. And once you have Ross isolated, he likes to drop back a lot, and that creates a lot of congestion in the midfield, and I think that's one of the main weaknesses. So I think playing two strikers up front is the best.
See, that's a very good point, because one of the problems that we've seen with McCormack, obviously McCormack can score goals, is that he does have that tendency to go farther back, and that causes problems. And if he's isolated alone, that could be an issue. So that might be the fly in the ointment with this situation with the 4-2-3-1. Andrew, what are your thoughts about this?
Well, I'm kind of a weird in talking about formations, whereas pretty much I think that almost all four-at-the-back formations are basically just variations on the same thing. If you're playing a 4-4-2, most often it's a 4-4-1-1, which if your wingers press a little high, all of a sudden that becomes a 4-2-3-1. And if they press a little bit higher, it's more actually a 4-3-3. And a 4-3-3 can actually just be a 4-4-2 diamond with a false nine. So they're all kind of the same thing, depending on – it's really just a matter of space. And that's one of the – as good as Ross McCormack is, that's one of the issues with him is he doesn't really occupy one space. He's just kind of – he goes where he goes, and that can make it hard on some of the other players. I don't think that he's a guy that you could play alone up top, because – if there's a weakness, one weakness in this game, it's probably hold-up play. You're not going to pass a ball up to him, have him hold it while guys make runs, and him turn around under pressure and pass it off to those guys. That's just not really his forte. If you're playing a 4-2-3-1, he almost is going to be playing like the withdrawn striker role, more as the attacking midfielder in that formation. And then you kind of worry is, well, where then does Tom Kearney play?
Right.
I mean, it's a good problem to have two guys who are really good in one area, but it's I'm almost with the opinion of Max. I think that the 3-5-2 might be best, but that kind of depends on the center backs. I mean, Tim Ream is a good center back to play in a 3-5-2 because he can play a left back or left center back, or he can play as a center back. You've got Maddle, who's actually a fairly athletic guy. He's not the kind of guy that you can sit in the middle and just win headers, but you could probably play him on a right in a three center back formation. So you really kind of need the big aerial guy in the center for that, which with Byrne leaving, we don't have. But what I'm just really curious to see how Slavisa wants to play. I think when I've looked back at his other squads, he's almost always played kind of either a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-4-1-1, depending on how you look at it. So I have a feeling that's what he's going to try to do here. But that's going to require probably another center back, definitely another, probably a central midfielder. And then, you know, where does Kearney fit into that? Is he the withdrawn striker and you put Ross up front? There's just a lot of questions, and the roster is so in flux right now. I just don't know what any of the answers are yet.
Right, and listen, this also goes to my thought when we were talking before, playing the players in the proper position to succeed. And I'm glad that you brought this up, because I'm not against James's assessment here that a really good formation could really change things. But as I looked at the history of Slavisa, and I remember talking to Raphael Geller, he tried to implement a 3-5-2 but did not have the players to do it. That was one of the formations he wanted to play in Israel, but it just didn't work out. And he has played it at Fulham, but I also think that I remember his days at Watford. You know, if I can remember correctly, I think he did change formations. He did mix and match, and I think you're going to see different formations. But if you're asking me, Andrew, I would like to see him as your main formation. I want to see the 3-5-2, so I agree with you.
Yeah, I've always been kind of a big 3-5-2 fan. You don't see it played that often anymore, but it is kind of making a comeback. I just think that there are a lot of attacking fullbacks out there, but it's very hard to find an attacking fullback who's also a good defender. And when you can get those attacking fullbacks in a 3-5-2, that eliminates some of their weaknesses, because, you know, that especially when they're young and pacey, defense is never going to be their strength, and putting in a 3-5-2 takes a lot of the pressure off of them.
Okay, very good. Very, very good. And, Max, you're already sold on the 3-5-2, so I'm assuming you wouldn't be against if that was Savisa's main formation this season.
I would not, no. I think you guys mentioned it, that the center backs are key and the full backs are key. So if they can get those two positions nailed down, which is a big if, then I think we'll be successful.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, let's move on to another article by James Eade. It is entitled, "What Does the Future Hold for Ryan Fredericks at Fulham?" And I'm just going to read some from that. He writes, "A right back who struggles to defend? A winger who's more defensive? What exactly is Ryan Fredericks?" He writes, "The question on everyone's lips, is Fredericks a fullback with potential or a winger played out of position?" Later on in the article, he writes, "Stamina issues and the weakness to his defensive game makes me question, is he simply an out-of-position winger that would thrive in a more attacking role? All in all, he's still young, and his raw talent has shown it is evident that he possesses lots of potential, and under the nurturing of Slavisa, hopefully we are still to see the best of Fredericks at fullback. Hopefully we will see the young right-back solidify the position as his own for years to come." Okay, so based on James's article, he would like to see him, if I'm reading it correctly, he'd like to see him be the right back. So, Max, I'm going to start with you. Is he a right back, or is he a winger?
I think what we just touched on kind of can answer both of these questions, because in a 3-5-2 formation, both. So
the wing back.
I think easy fix for Slavisa. You don't have to answer the question. He's both. So I do agree. He does have some of the best qualities of a winger. We've seen his pace so many times that it's unbelievable. Fulham recently put a post on Instagram which had a whole clip of his unbelievable runs, and you see how useful they are in breaking down opposition defense, especially late on in the game when the other opposition's fullbacks or timing, Frederick can be a real game changer, winning, using penalties, providing good service into the box. Of course, the question is he a good defender? And I think you can kind of teach that. He can be coached a little bit to know when to come back. But I think his pace is a huge asset, as no one's going to outrun him in the back. And then 3-5-2 formation, he can truly blossom. So I think he can be both. And he will, 3-5-2 is going to be a great option for him to thrive.
Yeah, I mean 3-5-2, he's a wing back, and that would suit him very well. And Andrew, I want to get your thoughts on this, because we've talked about this a lot on Cottage Talk. I think Ryan Fredericks has a huge amount of potential, but does he have the stamina to play 90 minutes? That's my number one concern with him. What are your thoughts about what is his best position?
I mean, I think ideally his best position is probably either as a wing back or a fullback. I just don't think his technical ability is quite good enough to be a winger. If he had the technical ability to be a winger, he'd be worth a lot more money than he is now. The big issue is that if you're going to play him as a fullback, you need to make sure that you really do have two holding midfielders in, and they're covering for those runs of his, because he's a bad one-on-one defender. I don't think I've seen him really get beat really bad when he's actually defending someone. He's just sometimes not in the right place. He gets caught up the field when he shouldn't be. He makes those mistakes that a lot of young players were, and sometimes his pace just isn't fast enough to bail him out. And I think that if you have two central midfielders, if you're playing like a 4-2-3-1, and you have two holding midfielders that are kind of branching out to cover that space, or one drops back, so where you're playing three at the back in possession, I think you can cover for that. Problem that Fulham has always had since they've had him is they haven't had two central holding midfielders, and they haven't had good center backs. So when he's forward and in a counterattack situation, bad things happen.
That's very true. That's very true there, Andrew. Max, over to you. What are your thoughts about what Andrew just shared?
Yeah, I think the center backs and the holding midfielders are key in a 3-5-2. And my one main concern about that is, in a team that has really struggled in defending and conceded the third most goals in the league, he's playing three at the back, really the most prudent formation. I'd like to think it could work, but I'm probably being a little optimistic here. And to be honest, I think nailing down the defense is the main concern. So those the position. I think being resolute defensively has to be the first concern. So.
I totally agree, Max. Totally agree with you. All right, guys, let's move on. Let's go to the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable. I have three topics. Let's kind of do this a little bit like around the horn, a little rapid fire here. It is speculation, so let's go through this, because we also have some questions from the phone supporters I'd like to get to as well. Max, I'm going to start with you. Speculation with Moussa Dembele is really heating up. Do you think he will take an improved contract with Fulham or go somewhere else? And if he leaves, where do you think he will go to?
It's really the million-dollar question, Russ, or the million-pound question, if you will. Because I think we saw on social media reports that he went to Galatasaray. There's probably a Photoshop picture of him with their chairman. That proved to be false. So I think Dembele is probably the biggest loss for Fulham. We touched on the past two academy graduates, Heinemann and Roberts. But to be honest with you, those two players never had a breakthrough at Fulham. None of those two players, you could say, if they left, wow, we're really going to miss a huge talent that's provided a lot every season. Dembele's the only player who's actually had a real impact in the first team, and that's why him leaving is going to be a huge loss. I want to say that he's going to stay, but unfortunately, I do think he'll leave, and I think he'll go somewhere, not in England, but I think probably France or Italy. That's my best.
Okay, and if he does leave, I seriously hope he stays in England, But listen, you could be on to something. The only thing I want to add about all the speculation in Turkey, I got to tell you, I'm doubtful whenever I see speculation from Turkey. This is just me, because Brian Ruiz, again, I saw all kinds of speculation that he was ready to go. Saw the same thing with Mitroglou. Go back to Karim Fry. It took another year of speculation for him to eventually move to Turkey, but the year before, there was all kinds of speculation that he was leaving. And none of it really panned out until, like I said, a year later with Kareem Fry. So keep that in mind when you see all these stories from Turkey. Andrew, what are your thoughts about Moussa Dembele?
Again, I would like him to stay. I think one more year in the championship, he could probably have his pick of almost any team in England going forward. Because he'll still be what? He'll still be 20 years old. He scores 20 goals in the championship as a 20-year-old next year. He could go anywhere he wants. But I think he probably goes. If the rumors for the amount of money that like Galatasaray were offering are true, I mean, that's hard to turn down. If someone's offering you that's going to be close to $3 million a year and you're 19, 20 years old, that's hard to say no to. But the fact that he hasn't already signed somewhere does leave me a little bit of hope. If there was one club out there that was just going to make him like the Godfather offer, you'd think he would have already taken it. So there's still a little bit of hope, but I think he probably still leaves.
Okay, and what are your thoughts on what Max shared? Because we've been talking about Pat Roberts, we're talking about Emerson Hyman, players with a huge amount of potential but never really broke through fully with Fulham. Well, Moussa Dembele has. So is this a significant loss? I think it is if he goes.
Yeah, I agree with that because, I mean, he was basically your target. I mean, he was your target forward last year. There was, I mean, coming off the bench, you had you either brought in Matt Smith or you, when Collie Woodrow was healthy, he could do the job, but again, he didn't get to play that much because of his health last year. So if he goes, you're either struggling to sign someone or you're putting a lot of faith that Collie Woodrow is going to have a really good year next year.
And I agree with you, and my thoughts on that, twofold. Let me stress, it's a significant loss. However, the loss can be lessened if two things happen. You bring in another striker. If you think he's going to go, I hope they're looking for another striker right now. That's number one. A proven striker. So my thought on this is, you know, again, if he goes, you better be ready for it. And, Andrew, for me, if they get a decent amount of money from either compensation or a tribunal, if he stays in England, then the blow of losing him is lessened because then you can reinvest that money. Do you see where I'm going on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. And even if he signs overseas, because of the FIFA rules and the UEFA rules with players from the academy, you still would get some compensation even if he does go overseas.
Right, but it would be less. It would be less.
It would be more if he stays in England. I forget what all the numbers are.
Yeah, if I can remember correctly, and Mike Gregg can correct me on this, I believe, again, this is just rough, I'm ballparking, I believe it was about £350,000 that would be the compensation if he leaves outside of England. If it's within England, then it's a tribunal, and then there's a possibility that it could be in the millions of pounds, which would be a decent return at this point for a player who's out of contract on June 30th. So we're going to have to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, I would say if you got £1 million for him between what he's done for your first team already, you've probably recouped the amount that you've invested in him.
Well, let me ask you, again, it's been reported in a couple of places that Fulham received compensation. This is speculation because we're never probably going to know the real number. But there is speculation that Fulham got £750,000 for Emerson Hyman. Do you think that's a fair amount, Andrew, if that's the case?
That's probably fair because I don't know that you would have been able to sell him for much more than that, even if he was under contract.
Okay. Max, thoughts on that?
Well, just an observation about Dembele. And remember the really odd situation in January when it was basically accepted he was going to Tottenham for £5 million. And then that fell through the last minute for whatever reason. Now, you know, maybe getting speculation of Turkey and that didn't turn out to be true. My question is, there's something going on behind the scenes that might be turning clubs off in the belt. Because the way the thing with Tottenham is, it's very odd. You think someone would already sign him up by now. So I just wondering if you guys had any insight to that.
Andrew?
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that real quick? I was getting another call at the exact moment that he started talking.
Yeah, sure. I was just wondering, there's something else going on that maybe we don't know about, because the way the Tottenham move got hijacked or didn't come off for whatever reason in January was a little odd, and our clubs may be backing out.
I think that the Tottenham, I have a lot of friends who are Tottenham supporters. My wife is a Tottenham supporter. I think that move was mainly because Tottenham really wanted him to join the club right away, and Fulham were like, you're welcome to have him, but we need him for the rest of the year. Unless you give us another striker, which they didn't have another striker to give us, that was why that move fell through. And I think they really just wanted him as cover for Harry Kane.
Right.
So I don't think that's probably scaring a lot of other clubs off. I think that the amount of compensation on a free could be scaring a few clubs off. The bigger clubs it doesn't matter for, but then again, if you're Moussa Dembele and these bigger clubs are calling, how much are you going to play there? That's something that he has to think about.
Okay, very good, very good. All right, guys, let's move on to some more speculation coming out of Spain. With Fernando Morbieta, there's a club in Spain that is interested in him but is not willing to pay a fee for him. Max, what would you do if you were in charge of Fulham in regards to Morbieta? Would you, would you demand a fee? I would demand a fee, and I'd keep him along unless you get the price you want. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, exactly. I don't think Morbieta has any future for him. I've never really rated him. I think he's a massive liability on the pitch, considering his temper, the amount of red cards and yellows he gets is frankly ridiculous for a player in the professional level. So, I think, but if Sporting Gijón want him, I would definitely demand compensation, because I don't know what a level he plays with Austin Green, no matter how many red cards he gets. So, I think you have to have some tough negotiating skills for Fulham, and I think in the end they will get the seat out of the other side.
Okay, very good. Andrew, what are your thoughts about Morbieta?
I would not be sad to see him go. When I was actually doing the player rankings, I was looking through and just the amount of yellows and reds that he gets per game and his fouls per game versus someone like Tim Ream, who actually did not get a card all year. And they're basically the same player. They're both marginal left backs who can also play center back, so seeing him go would not really bother me. I'm not as hung up on the fee as some other people are, because best I can find, and it's really hard to find player salaries for English players, he makes over £1 million a year. And just getting that off your books and having an extra £1 million to spend could be pretty beneficial. I mean, in the Championship, you can actually buy pretty good players for £1 million.
Okay, very good there, my friend, very good. All right, we have one more piece of speculation to talk about. And, Andrew, I'm going to go right back to you, because here we are talking about strikers with Moussa Dembele. Well, reportedly, Wolves have made a £750,000 bid for Matt Smith. Would you sell him if you got the price you wanted, or do you hold on to him because he offers you a plan B with his direct style play? What would you do with Matt Smith if you were in charge of Fulham?
I would not object to selling him. I kind of liked the idea of buying him when Fulham did, because he had just been partnered with Ross McCormick. Ross McCormick had led the Championship in goals paired with him. It seemed like kind of a good strategy, but he's just never really fit in. And at best on this squad, you're talking about him being your bench striker to bring in and just hoof balls up to when you're behind. And if someone's going to pay you, you get your salary off the book, and you can maybe reinvest in someone with a little bit more upside, I think that's probably good business. From what I've seen, it's like they're arguing over about £50,000, and if I wouldn't argue over £50,000. If you want $800 and they're offering $750, I would just take it.
Okay, very good. Max, would you do that if you were in charge of Fulham?
Well, Max Smith is one of those players who sounds great on paper. He's a proven championship forward. He's obviously 6-6 with a massive presence in the air. But I agree, he's never really had a true impact at Fulham. And we would have liked him to succeed, but I don't really think he fits in completely with the Leafs' plan. So I would accept the bid from Wolves. Seems like Wolves have made it a habit to kind of poach our unwanted players this season. But I would take it.
Okay. Okay. Very good there. All right. All right, guys. We do have some. We do have some questions from the phone supporters. I'm going to pull them up in a second. Of course, just as we speak, I can't find them, but I think they're right here. Here they are. And I thought that would be a great way to end the show because I put this on the Cotter's Talk Facebook page asking for questions. So let's go through them. We've got, like I said, we've got three. We might only get to a few of them. Let's start with Ryan Guy. And, Max, I'll start with you. How many new first-team players should we expect to see come in during the transfer window? What are your thoughts on that?
All right. It's always difficult to say because last season, I think everyone agreed at the time it was a great transfer window in the summer, and I think we brought in 11 players. And seeing at the time, they're all proven championship players with good pedigrees, like the Ben Pringle and the Lonergan, Spearman, and others, and everyone was really happy. Now, most of those players turned out to be less than ideal, and it kind of shows buying in bulk wasn't necessarily a good idea. As we bought a whole new team of players, and the season still went pretty poorly. So I really would settle for four or five quality center backs and midfielders rather than the numbers we got last season. So I would say five new players, hopefully a center midfielder and a center back at the top of the list.
Wow. So you're looking at four or five. I'm thinking higher than that. Andrew, your thoughts?
Well, I think the biggest position we need is I don't even know if we have a real left back on the roster right now.
I totally agree with that.
So we definitely need a left back. If Amore Bieta goes, you might even need two left backs because you're basically going from Amore Bieta and then Tim Ream is your backup left back. So you might need two. You're going to need at least one central or center back, possibly two. You're going to need one holding midfielder. And then you're going to need maybe, if Matt Smith goes and Moussa Dembele goes, you're going to need at least one striker. And then it kind of depends on the formation you play, whether you need like some wing players or what. And then the other thing is, what do you expect from some of your young players? Is Jack Grimmer ready to be a backup center back and a backup right back? Is Sean Kavanagh ready to be your backup left back and maybe a backup, you know, winger? Those are some questions up in the air. I'd say at minimum you're looking at five or six new players, and it wouldn't shock me if they went if it was like last year where they brought in like 10 guys.
See, I'm leaning towards 10 guys, believe it or not. I'm leaning higher. I see where Max is going because he still sees some of the players we have. But, you know, as potential, because like you said, there are players there that will stick. But I also see Slavica wanting to build his own team. So I could imagine 10. I could see that. But we'll end up seeing, you know, it could be somewhere in the middle. But I wouldn't be shocked if it was 10. I'd be a little bit surprised, Max, if it was as low as 5. I think it's going to be higher than that. That's just my thoughts.
Yeah, you know, I mean, ideally, I'd love to bring in 10 brilliant players, but I think we do have to be a little realistic here that the draw of home is not really what it used to be, and I think I personally settle for 5 quality players rather than 10 who might be intermittent.
Well, I'll just end this topic with just saying, because I've seen a lot of talk about this. You know, we need to spend money, we need to spend money, we need to spend money. And my thought always is it's not spending money, it's how you spend your money, meaning that you can spend all the money in the world. You can spend all the money you did on Kostas Mitroglou, all the money you spent on Brian Ruiz, all that money. You spent a ton of money. Where did it get you? It's how you spend the money. It's getting the right players. If they find the right players, I don't care what they pay for them as long as they bring in the right players. It's not about how much money you spend. It's spending your money wisely and finding the right players, playing the system, play the way that Slavica Jokanović wants them to play. You know, I'm not about the name. I'm about finding the right players. That's where I'm going on that. Do you see where I'm going on that, Max, before we move on?
Exactly, yeah. Completely agree.
All right. We're going to end with this. We do have an additional question from Tom. I'm sorry, Tom. We're not going to be able to get to yours because I want to end with this one from our Carter Star co-host in Australia, James Dowden. And, Andrew, I'm going to go right to you on this because I think it's a very interesting way to end the show. Do you think Savisa will be given a points target this season to achieve just the same as Kit did? Andrew, what are your thoughts on this?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think it'll be like a set-in-stone target like Kit had. I think Kit was an interesting situation because I'm not sure that they ever really wanted to hire Kit Simmons, but right after he took over, the club went on a run, and they kind of felt like they had no choice because they went on a run, and after that like impressive 5-6 games he had where they were searching for a manager, it would have been really hard to just fire the guy who had a lot of Fulham history and bring in someone new. But I think they really knew internally that he wasn't really the guy that they wanted. I don't know if Slavisa is that guy, but I think they also know that they can't just fire another manager. And as long as he is not in the relegation zone, I think his job is going to be safe for the entire year. If he starts to fall back and looks like the team might be fighting relegation again, I can see them firing him. But as long as the team is not struggling with relegation, I think they're going to stick with him just for some continuity, because what they really don't want to be is the team that just is firing managers every 6 months, because once you get that reputation, that is a hard thing to shake.
See, I'm conflicted on this, and you brought up the reasons why I'm conflicted. You brought up all the reasons why Savisa should be given, I guess you could say, more time than, say, Kit. But if you're being fair, Andrew, if you're being fair, he should be under the same kind of pressure that Kit was. So that's where I'm conflicted on this. I see where you're going on that because we need the continuity. But if Shad Khan is being fair to whoever is in charge and keeping them accountable, doesn't he owe it to us as fans to make Savisa accountable and have a points total?
Probably in an ideal world, that would be the case. And I might be the wrong person to ask because I've gotten in trouble for this on Twitter before, because I'm of the opinion that managers don't actually matter that much, as long as you're not like the worst manager and you're not one of the greatest managers in the world. Everyone else is kind of in the middle, and it's really the players that win the games. And I don't think Slavisa is one of the greatest managers in the world, and I also don't think Kit Simmons was one of the worst managers in the world. I both think that they're kind of in that middle group where if you give them good players, they will get results, and if you give them bad players, they're going to struggle. And I think a lot of the problems with Fulham and the problems Kit Simmons had, he didn't have very good players, and I think we haven't had great players at Fulham for a while now, and we need to get that sorted out before we start worrying about just firing a manager every 6 months.
Okay.
Well, Andrew, I do think managers...
Go ahead, Matt.
I mean, I do think managers play a role, maybe not a bigger role as the media might make it up to. But I think if you look at Simmons, his substitutions were poor, tactics were pretty naive, and he certainly wasn't experienced. So I do think that made a difference. But I actually agree completely with what you said about the continuity thing versus the results thing, because the club simply, it's not the same as this number of managers. I mean, if you think about it, since Yol, even since Hughes, you've had an unbelievable amount of managers in the last 5-6 years. That's simply not sustainable. And everyone knows the key to success is keeping a stable club that has managers who can steer the team. So that was a conflict with Simmons, was that, well, you know, he's been pretty poor, but we don't want to keep firing people. And it turned out that we probably maybe should have fired him a little bit earlier, as the start of the season should. With Slavisa, I think with the whole summer being given to him, and with if Shahid Khan really does give him a big transfer purse and he can pursue the players he wants to, I think maybe not a point total, but I'd say top half table at least. I mean, I'm being a little optimistic. The playoffs, definitely in the next 2 years. Because we don't want to be stranded in the mid-table championship and have that kind of mediocrity anymore. We'll have to be in the Premier League, and Slavisa has to be held to a high standard. But I don't think there's any reason he can't achieve it.
Okay, very interesting. And it's funny, like I said, I can't get over this confliction I have, because I see the points both of you are making on this. And let me stress, I want Savica to succeed. I think he's the right guy. But I also have this feeling of fairness. And if you're going to put all that pressure on Kit Simons, then Savica deserves to have that same kind of pressure, because we want to get back to the Barclays Premier League, and he needs to feel the heat. So that's where I'm going on that. I think he's going to succeed, and I think he should be put under pressure, because I think my thoughts are managers, good managers, will respond well under pressure. So that's where I'm going on that. But it's an interesting way to end the show, guys, because it sounds like Andrew, like David Holly, are more concerned about the players, and I understand that. I don't think the players have been good enough. Well, let's see what players come in this upcoming season. All right, guys, we do have to wrap up the show. I want to get final thoughts from both of you. I will start with you, Max. Any final thoughts about what we talked about tonight?
Final thoughts is that, to be honest with you, Savica's results have not been the greatest. Not truly delivered the results that we have hoped in the second half of last season. However, I do accept that was not his team, that was not his squad. This summer, with the big transfer budget and a chance to reform his squad in his first full off season, I really do think Fulham can have a successful year, and let's hope that they can do that.
Okay, very good. And again, we're talking about this, and I'm going to sound like I'm the bad guy here, like wanting to put pressure on Savica. I just, I want to get back to the Premier League, guys, and I want him to build his own squad. I want him to have a chance to build his own squad. But if it's going south, we're talking about September, October, and he's not going to be near where he needs to be, well, Khan needs to seriously consider his position. I think it's only fair. But that's just where I'm going on that. Andrew, your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are, if Savica starts to struggle, the especially the higher-ups of the team, starting from the chairman on down, really need to think about why that they have had four or five managers in a row, and they've all struggled, and none of those managers have really been in charge of bringing players in. We've moved to the strategy of having, kind of the technical director who identifies the players, and the manager who is mainly just responsible for on-field tactics, substitutions, and playing those players. And if you've had four managers who they can't figure out how to make these players play defense, it really comes down to you're giving them bad players, and you need to, take a look in the mirror and figure out why you're doing that, and maybe bring in someone else to start identifying players. Because I think that's been the problem at Fulham lately, is that they just have identified bad players, and I don't know what they're using to identify players. It seemed like now they're using statistics. Before that, like last offseason, it seemed they were just bringing players in who had success in the championship and kind of been voted player of the year by the fans and other teams. And neither of those strategies have worked, and they need to find a strategy to bring in players that can win. Because if you continuously are hiring managers and none of them are succeeding, it might not be their fault, because eventually you're just going to get lucky and one of those managers shouldn't be bad. And I can't believe that we've just hired bad manager after bad manager after bad manager. I think a lot of the problem is that they just have been identifying players that don't fit.
Okay, and that's a wonderful point, Andrew. It's basically, how are you buying the groceries, basically? How are you who's buying the groceries and how are they being bought? How are you coming to these decisions? And that's a very good point, because if they're in, say, a similar position that they were last season, they have to look at the overall business model, everything to deal with Fulham, the football, the business, everything, because everything's connected. They have to look at the players that they're bringing in and why are these players not the right players? Because that's what it comes down to, Andrew. I think I'm going to be in agreement with you. They need to find the right players. Identify the right players. Correct?
Yeah, that is what I think too, because I just can't believe that it was I mean, Felix McGaffo is a crazy person, so we will kind of throw him out. But Martin Yolas had success,
yeah.
And he was struggling. Felix McGaffo, that was just, we'll just ignore that. But Kit Simmons had problems. Renee Muhlenstein had problems. Even Slavisa has had problems. And these are all guys who have had success and seem to know what they're doing. And if they, none of them can make it work, you have to start thinking that maybe the tools we're giving them just aren't right.
And that's a wonderful point. And if it fails again, Andrew, they should look inside. I totally agree with you because the, you know, the whole system of how they come to their decisions needs to be looked at. If this fails again, great point by you. Great final thought. My final thought is basic, guys. Basically, I just want to say thank you for doing this because I've enjoyed these two episodes of the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're going to make this a regular thing. We're going to do this twice a month, and we're going to rotate among the other writers of Cottagers Confidential. I just want to mention a couple of these other writers. Max, you're a writer. Andrew's the editor. We've also had on David Kettlehake. I know that James Eade wants to come on. Hopefully, we're going to have him on. Adam Braun-Smith, also in England along with James, has mentioned he wants to come on, and I'm sure there'll be others as well. And I really enjoy doing the show with you guys. So, Max, thank you very much for joining me tonight.
It's been a pleasure, Russ. I had a great time. Come on, Philip.
Okay. All right. And, Andrew, thank you again, my friend. You were excellent. Look forward to many more shows with the two of you and the other writers of Cottagers Confidential. Before we go, I just want to mention, please do go to cottagersconfidential.espnation.com. I'm the original editor. It's a wonderful website, and Max is doing a great job writing. Andrew is doing a phenomenal job as editor. Please go check it out because we have some really excellent writers that are writing some interesting stuff, and we talked about three articles by one guy, but I'm telling you, there's some very interesting articles up there, so please check it out. And guys, once again, thank you, but it is time to go. So let's wrap up the show. For Andrew and Max, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys. Have a great night.
You too, Russ.
Cheers, Russ. Boys.